You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, March 31st, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, a special Thursday edition of Cliff Schechter, sort of reviewing the week in politics, news, and also on the program, a special guest to celebrate the 12-year anniversary of the first commercial broadcast of the Majority Report, Janine Garofalo. Meanwhile, Trump and the Republicans, not completely off the rails, but significantly off the rails, careening towards being completely off the rails, heading towards a large building that actually stores thousands of gallons of petrol that is highly flammable. I mean, I could go on, but I think we get the idea. It also, that building is the only thing that stops the train from going over this huge cliff, falling into this massive ravine with rapid waters down below that weirdly lead into a massive shark tank, which also happens to be full of piranhas and acid. The Zubik ruling is in. It's strange, and it's not over. That's the big contraceptive case involving the Affordable Care Act. Corporations now are nervous to sponsor the Republican convention. Why? I wonder why. I think it has to do with that acid tank at the end of that careening train. Meanwhile, in Kansas and Oklahoma, those states are now as quake-prone as California because of drilling. And then a funny story about Murdoch's ex-wife now dating Vladimir Putin. I don't know. Just to be able to say all those words is just funny. I mean,
frankly, it's a disaster. I mean, look, this guy, first she cheats on him with Tony Blair. Now she's with Vladimir. I mean, look, the guy, I mean, it's sad.
Frankly. It's sad.
Yeah, look, it's sad. Frankly, it's pathetic.
Oh,
hello,
my God.
Wendy.
Oh, my
Where
God.
Where are you at, baby?
I think the listeners of this program may commit mass suicide if Donald Trump actually becomes president, just because of the opportunity for you to continue to do the impression.
And that's also why I would like to announce now that I will be voting for Donald Trump.
Why? Because you want everyone to commit suicide.
If that's the cost of my impression, it's not like a desire, but if they need to do that, then that's on them.
I feel like maybe what we need to do is just get you like a
artist.
Soundproof room, and you can do it just like for an hour every day in a soundproof room to yourself.
I feel like he does.
Well, it's not a sound. It's not a soundproof room, but
right.
I do do it.
Right.
Yeah.
At
it's
home.
Like called
it's also
his
not
room
an
in the
hour.
Shower.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we get to Cliff and to Janine, who's going to join us. Today is March 31st, 12 years ago today. The first Majority Report, that was on Aramark. We did one before that, but that was on community radio for a day. So that wasn't really, that didn't count. 12 years late. Oh, my God. Can't believe I've gotten that old. Ladies and gentlemen, let's not talk about that. It appears that John Kasich has figured out a way in which he can overtake Donald Trump in this primary election. Well, maybe he hasn't. He's figured out a way that he's going to try and challenge Trump. Yeah, here it is. He is asked a question in the CNN's, I guess it was town hall. Was this Tuesday night? The Tuesday night CNN town hall. And this is what Kasich had to say in response.
Hello, Governor Kasich, if you become the nominee of the party, who are you going to pick for your vice president?
Are you available? You look great tonight. Now, you know what? That's so far ahead. That's like measuring the drapes.
Yes. But I pick- Interesting. Measuring the drapes. Yes. So he gets a question from a woman, says, you look great. Are you available to be my, because apparently that's, this is the guy who is the moderate, sort of more progressive in the way that he treats women. John Kasich apparently has a pretty big history of stuff. Like, you remember, like you said, like the women coming out of the kitchen.
He has a general history with just sort of women and beyond of actually just being a jerk. Like the story of Kasich being like calling a cop who pulled him over and I think an idiot. Like the sort of general sense of him as a really belligerent, unpleasant person would have gotten a lot more play if he wasn't running against two of the most belligerent, unpleasant people in the history of humanity.
I mean, he has this pattern. There was this one time, I guess, in October. When a female student at a one of these town halls raised his hand to ask him a question, and his first response was, I don't have any tickets for Taylor Swift or anything. And apparently he, to explain his prudence with financial matters, he always leads into, when he's explaining this to women, have you ever been on a diet?
Oh, I get it, because they'll understand it, because it's something from their lives. Oh, that's really shrewd of him.
He talks about the spouses of elected officials being at home doing their laundry. I mean, maybe he's just very insightful. He's constantly looking over the data of domestic chores, like Rebecca Traister was talking about yesterday in the program. But I find that hard to believe.
The anecdotal stuff is nice, but he also defunded Planned Parenthood in Ohio in February.
Yes, the guy is
a little more direct.
Absolutely, he's got he has major assaults on women's rights in a myriad of ways, but you can see where it comes from is just sort of this guy still thinks it's 1947.
Well, in his defense, he has respect for tradition because that's exactly how they picked their vice president in 2008.
That's right.
That's exactly right. So it's almost like Ted Cruz, in my most lurid visions of him as an incredibly disturbed, evil person, would be like someone who would potentially roofie someone. Donald Trump.
All right, I got to get to it. Let me do this because we're running a little bit late. Folks, as you know, it's the last day of March. And as you also know, Saul turned three this March. And as I'm sure you know by now, my truly favorite of the bunch, Harry's.com, also turned three. And Harry's has got a special deal for you to celebrate their three-year anniversary. You know how normally when you buy a Harry's starter set, $15, which is an amazing deal in and of itself. Well, now with the code MajorityReport, You get three of their expertly crafted five-blade German razors, a handle, and moisturizing shave cream for just $10. If you've never tried it before, you get it for $10 with the code MAJORITYREPORT. Now, I haven't done an appearance on cable television this week, so I haven't shaved. That's just the way I'm rolling. But when I do, I get the best shave of my life from my Harry's razor. Harry's the only shaving company that has both amazing quality and low prices. They're factory direct. They cut out the middleman. They ship it right to your door. Over 1 million folks have already made the switch. Thousands more switch every day. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com? The starter set, like I said, is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shaving cream, and three razor blades. But to celebrate their birthday, they're going to give you $5 off your first order with promo code MAJORITYREPORT. Stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to harrys.com right now. That's Harry's, like H-A-R-R-Y-S. .com. Enter code Majority Report at checkout. That's C-H-E-C-K-O-U-T. Gonna take a quick break. Be right back with Cliff Schechter.
Here comes Dick. He's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane. You know she's sporting a chain. Same hair, evolution. Same build, evolution. Tomorrow, who's gonna fuss? And they love each other so. Androgynous. Closer than you know. Love each other so. Androgynous. Get him wrong, don't get him mad. He might be a father, but he's sure a dad. And she don't need advice to send to her. She's happy the way she looks. She's happy with her gender. And they love each other.
Replacements Androgynous from the Let It Be album, 1983? I think it was. No, 84, I can't remember, but nevertheless, we're playing that for a reason. Today is International Transgender Day of Visibility. That has implications for one of the stories we're going to talk about with our next guest. But this guy is usually here on Fridays, but we have, through manipulating the time-space continuum, we've got him here today. And how do I know he's here today? Because I hear this in the distance.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC.
Yes, Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us on a Thursday, on a day which I don't know if you're aware of, is the 12-year anniversary of the launch of this show on Air America. You know, we've got tomorrow's Friday is April 1st, and we have a lot of complications with the show tomorrow. So I appreciate your being here today, Cliff.
Well, just that you would have me on such a special day.
Well, of course, of course.
Makes me excited.
Who better?
I mean, it's sort of like, it's. Yeah, thank you. I mean, first of all, I missed last week, which, you know, was tough on all of us.
Yes.
Me, anyhow. And, you know, it's a day when we can all remember sort of maybe the beginnings of that glorious relationship between you and Mark Green.
That certainly predated Mark Green, but there was a couple of us that I am still in touch with from those early days. One of them is Janine Garofalo, of course, and she'll be joining us later in the program. It is fascinating, and we'll get to this as we talk about Trump. I mean, you know, there were definitely indications in 04 that that something was amiss with the Republican Party. But I want to jump to
something had gone awry.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And you know what has changed dramatically, at least within the context of society. I mean, I don't know, more so than anything else. I mean, perhaps I think there is an argument that there has become a sort of a greater awareness of the class war that has been raging in terms of economics and the 1%. But one of the biggest differences in society, I think, was that in 2004, at this time, there were at least a half a dozen to a dozen states that were putting ballot measures on to prevent the federal government or from the Supreme Court, you know, or basically the federal government from making any statute that would recognize that gay people are equal citizens and have an equal right to marry. And the country
really are even in many of these places human beings.
Yes,
with the kind of rhetoric that, I mean, it's not to say that there still isn't bigoted rhetoric in the public square, but what was readily acceptable is almost shocking, you know, to see that we've changed to a point where you can't just say certain things and be called out. Which we're about to talk about North Carolina, and that'll be a great example when you see and what's going on with Georgia, where they didn't, where the bill was not signed, and why it wasn't signed. Which is that society is no longer at least accepting of these things. But 2004 was a serious low point.
Serious low point. I mean, I think it was actually probably sometime around now or maybe the end of 2003 where George Bush got on national television in a prime time address, I think, from the Oval Office, saying that he was pushing for a federal amendment to the Constitution. To basically enshrine bigotry against gay people, and yeah. and so
up there with prohibition in terms of those great amendments that take things away, as
yeah,
opposed to adding rights.
Yeah, but in many ways worse. In fact, in 100 ways worse, because it's not just, you know, taking away at least with prohibition, you're taking away everybody's right. Right, like you're not
true.
Singling out a subset of Americans for second class citizenry, and
although I will say quickly that in terms of historical analysis, that clearly it was aimed at that Irish people as well as others who partook in certain kinds of drinking that was not approved by Methodists and Evangelicals. But your point is correct, because it
right.
didn't call out specific people and say, you know, you're gay, and so you can't do A, B, and C. But there was an element of punishing the other in that.
Well,
but
I think
ahead.
In probably everything, you know, yeah. that's like infused in American politics in some fashion or another. But
yeah.
So here we have this situation where Georgia and North Carolina both passed legislation. In North Carolina, it was even sort of just... It was, I don't know if it included, if Georgia included this sort of override of local ordinance, but the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, had passed basically a city ordinance that I believe had to do with housing, that you could not discriminate against LGBT people in housing. And it was overridden, and there. This apparently is a very big problem in the transgender community, because obviously, if you're not allowed to have a home, you end up spiraling.
Not having a home is really not a good thing.
Yeah, if you're not allowed to sort of rent an apartment because you're transgender, because you can't fight the, because you can't find somebody who will. Allow you to stay to rent an apartment or evict you. I mean, never mind. We also know that in half the states in the country, you can be fired for being gay. You can be kicked
That's
out,
right.
like I say, of housing for being gay or transgender. And
yeah, for people that thought that you know, marriage equality was the end of the line, it's not. There's obvious. I mean, I think most people who listen to this show and follow these issues know that, but
well, we had Michael Signorelli on, who literally wrote the book on that, that it's not over yet, and this is a prime example. Now, like you say, Georgia, the governor there vetoed the bill because they were, there was, I mean, this is sort of like the part, the societal part of the story, and it also has very much to do with corporations, sadly, but the impact, the economic impact that Georgia was bracing itself for. Now, you remember, like, you know, they also destroyed their crops, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when they had this anti-immigrant bill. I mean, these guys are just unbelievable in Georgia.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, Nathan Deal, the governor, one of these right-wing blue dog Democrats, turned Republican very easily. It was an easy switch for him. Is somebody who has been pretty much for almost everything repellent that has been offered up there. So let's not think he suddenly had a, you know, had a come to Jesus moment and realized that he was being a bad person. In fact, unlike the Jesus he believes in, and because he hasn't done this on anything else, and he expressed some support for this initially. Well, then something happened. A few things happened. First of all, I didn't know this. Maybe you know this, Sam, because you're a plugged in entertainment kind of guy. You know, you got Jeanine Garofalo coming on and all that. But it turns out that that it was Hollywood South is the nickname for it. I guess the Atlanta area in Georgia. They put a lot of money into studios and to filming there. And
Walking Dead, that whole, all that happens in Georgia. There's a huge amount of production in all the TBS, all the cartoons networks. There's a lot of movie productions down there.
That, like, I probably should have known that, but I didn't. And they all said, done, you pass this, we leave, and stop all investment here. But then also, let's give credit where credit is due. There were a number of companies, a number of businesses that are there, and they're not all just big corporations. Some are. But some of them, you know, I saw some of these stories on Twitter, and I just wish I could remember, because a few of the protagonists in these stories seem to be really good people who had growing medium-sized companies who just announced, you know, and they kind of went viral and like, well, I guess we're leaving Georgia. You know, we've loved being here and we've loved the growing company to grow here, but we were not, you know, we want the best talent possible and we're not going to live in a place that's bigoted. So we're going to have to move. And I think there was just enough of that that Deal, you know, we brought our pressure to bear, and when I say we, those who are progressive and think somewhere beyond the 18th century, and it stopped him in his tracks. Now, I don't know if the leverage wasn't as much in North Carolina. You'd think there certainly are some major companies there. Obviously, you know, I don't know what.
I'll tell you what I think it was.
There's a lot of investment being going on in startups and all that, so I don't know. That they maybe, and maybe, frankly, McCrory is just a bigger a-hole. I don't know.
I have two theories on it. One is, in Georgia, you had the football. You had the idea of, like, I think it was the Super Bowl, too. That was, I think there was a big point of leverage. But in North Carolina, did this all incredibly fast. I mean, this was like a 10 p.m. at night type of signing deal. And I just don't think that there was an awareness. You know, the government affairs of these corporations, you know, tracking this type of bill probably, in these specific states. And I have a feeling this caught people for surprise. And I have a feeling that McCrory didn't even realize it was going to be, this harsh. And,
but it's amazing. Like, he didn't see what happened to Pence. You know, I mean, that would may have been a different bill, but clearly it was that stupid, I won't even say what, you know, the religious, let's call it a religious bigotry bill, not what they try to call it. In Indiana, obviously, it was a similar type of attack on the LGBT community, and the response was so bad that Pence looks like he could lose his reelection.
Yeah.
And so the press he got, so McCrory, I just don't think is very bright. And didn't, I mean, how you could not see it coming, but I think you're right. They moved it quickly. They didn't see it coming. There was no Super Bowl threat. But, there, you know, I mean, North Carolina is a growing new South, quote-unquote, state with lots of investment being put into the Research Triangle and other things, and it has a government that completely doesn't represent them. And I think what's interesting, while I hate that he did this, look, it's not like governing under the McCrory and this legislature that was gerrymandered and hasn't been terrible for the people of North Carolina. It has been. And in a way, you know, you want the largest contrast possible. And guess what? Magically, there aren't that many states. Most states have their gubernatorial elections in the off year. Mm. However, not North Carolina. His reelection is coming up this year. And so the one positive I will take from this is that this guy has now set up a contrast in a key swing state. We've also got a senator in Senator Burr there, who's potentially a target for the Democratic senators to try to win back the Senate, and this is a lot of these state legislators too. So now you throw in a Trump at the top of the ticket and some other things, and maybe one little bonuses because he's done stupid things like this and made the contrast so clear. One of the little bonuses in a high turnout year can be that we can kick this guy and a number of his henchmen in the state legislature out of office, and wouldn't that be a nice, you know, little coda to the whole thing?
That would be fantastic, and then see if that maybe we get, I don't know how something like this gets reversed. I really don't. Maybe, you know, laws like this, hopefully, that, you know, I guess the best case scenario is that we will see some type of ENDA-like federal legislation, but we're not going to see it. Certainly under a Republican-controlled House.
Either that or we take over the state legislature and we win over the governorship and they reverse it, which is not, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen immediately. I don't know how, if they're as badly gerrymandered as we are here in Ohio, my sense is they probably are. And so one cycle, even if it's a disastrous cycle for them, would be very tough to turn the whole thing around. But, you know, if it turns enough of it around, maybe there's ways they can get around this. Maybe there's executive orders. Maybe there's non-enforcement. Their attorney general there has said he will not stand up for it in court. He's a great, he's progressive Cooper, or at least as far as I know, progressive, certainly he's progressive on this. And so maybe we can be looking at, you know, the non-enforcement, the eventual.
Now, people should understand removal. The non-enforcement in this instance would be, I'm not going to take a city like Charlotte to court, let's say. And prevent them from passing these ordinances. Now, I mean, if you happen to live in one of the other sort of, you know, backwards place in North Carolina, you're SOL. And it's, you know, I hope it just, it's
no,
very.
And I want to be very clear because it's easy for me to say this, right? And I'm a white straight guy who doesn't have to put up with this. So I hope nobody takes me the wrong way. I mean, I would not want this just so we can win a political race ever. It's more the fact that what they've done there with their own little Koch brother, Art Pope, who's basically the statewide Koch brother there, is they've hurt so many groups of people with the laws they've passed, the horrible laws that have taken away women's rights, the horrible assault on the poor, you know, by cutting all sorts of funding and the many various things they've done. And so I'm not saying I feel terrible for anybody who's hurt by this law, but I'm hoping that maybe that means everyone is helped by getting this bastard out of office. And I think that in the end would you know, hopefully we can turn around a number of things that he's done and maybe kick out some of these state legislators who have done similar things.
Right.
So that's all I'm saying. I feel terrible for anybody who's going to be affected by it.
Yeah, and I hope just people sort of can absorb this notion that there is still just an incredible amount of discrimination that I think that most people just are not aware of, and it's just sort of hard for them to even comprehend that in 25 some odd states or so, you can get kicked out of your apartment. You can get kicked out of, you can get fired from your job for being gay or transgender. And I just, you know.
And even if you live in those states, I think it's easy for a lot of people not to realize because you know, if you live in Louisiana, but you live in New Orleans, chances are you're not going to have a problem, right? It's really, it's not just the state you live in, it's what part of the state you live in. So for a lot of us, even people that would be affected by this kind of thing, you can walk through life and not notice it because you may be in the big city in that state. But for those living in rural or exurban areas or even suburban areas or even certain discriminatory parts of those cities, it's a whole different thing. And so that's what we always have to remind ourselves, which is because we don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening.
All right. I want to turn our attention to a positive, and it's across the country. In California, a deal was struck this week to raise the minimum age to the minimum wage, I should say, to $15 an hour as of 2022, I believe. Two. And 50 cents in year one, 50 cents in year two, and then up by a buck in each year until it lands at $15 an hour. So, you know, it's not quite $15 an hour in today's money. I mean, assuming a small rate of inflation
It's, you know, probably closer to $14. Nevertheless,
right.
This is a big...
When you compare how slowly the minimum wage has gone up overall, even in progressive states...
Indeed.
It's hugely important, and also it just shows the value of another tactic that I think initially was a tactic of the right. We brought that up originally talking about 2004, where they used the referendum process to screw with all sorts of constitutions and you know, ballot initiatives. But the irony of all that is that on most issues, the majority of people in the majority of states agree with us. It's all the roadblocks that they put up in blocking people from voting and gerrymandering and, you know, other things like that that makes it so that you don't necessarily see that. So in a state like California, they threatened to put this on the ballot. And just, you know, I mean, obviously California is where one of the most famous ballot initiatives of all took place, you know, that screwed that state for still going through issues, right, because of the tax revolt.
Right.
And the thing now, the great thing is that when these guys don't live up to it, I'm hoping we live up to that model here in Ohio. We lost that pot initiative last year, but you know what? It forced these guys in the legislature here who had ignored medicinal marijuana and refused to take it up. We haven't gotten there yet, but they've had to at least put some show into that they're taking it up. And if they don't, a medicinal marijuana type initiative will get on the ballot. So it's a good way for states, you know, even in swing states and others where there are very overwhelmingly popular items like that they choose to ignore, where we can say, fine, you ignore it, we'll do it. So
and understand what the
California.
And people should understand what the dynamic was here. It was clear that this ballot initiative was going to pass, that it would have probably raised it a year or two quicker in terms of where it would land at $15 an hour. I think instead of 2022, it was 2020. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I know that dynamic was in play, that the rate of acceleration of the minimum wage would have been faster. And so you say to the legislature, look, here's the deal. You can either fight something that is going to pass anyways, or you can get out ahead of it and maybe, you know, mitigate whatever your concerns are, or, you know, we can make a deal in the right parlance of somebody who we'll talk about in a bit. And look, this is why this is sort of a fascinating state to be raising the minimum wage in, because there are obviously parts of California where a $15 minimum wage is going to, I mean, have it's going to help the people who are getting the money, but it sort of in terms of the economics in the city itself are not really going to influence much, you know, like a San Francisco or, you know, maybe an LA or certain cities where, you know,
although those cities are also doing it on their own.
Yes. But my
at a faster pace.
Right. Yep. But my point being that there's this juxtaposition between a city, let's say like San Francisco, I'm just using as an example, because I can't think of another city in California right now, and I know there's a bunch of them apparently, but also places in California where there's far more poverty, far more or far less wealth, and so you have you know, in more rural parts of California where $15 an hour becomes a fairly big deal. And so the mainstream economic thought is that in some of those areas, you may see job losses. Now, I'm of the opinion that if things are going to go like they have in the past, when we see this, some small amount of perhaps teenagers losing jobs, but in the main, economies improving because you're putting more money in the hands of consumers. So any job loss that would be a function of people having to pay more payroll is going to be made up and negated because there's going to be more economic activity from people who are making 15 bucks an hour.
I will say, because quickly, that, you know, I did some work with this on this issue. I don't remember if we had Nick Hanauer on your show or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might have.
We did. I think I've had him on once or twice at least.
Yeah, and he's one of the original folks in Seattle who started pushing for the $15 minimum wage there. And of course, all the cries of, you know, Armageddon came through, and Seattle has shown nothing, especially the restaurant association there, the local version said, oh my God, you know, this is going to decimate us. In fact, nothing except for the exact opposite has happened, because more people have had more money to spend. And guess what? If you don't have customers because we've got such a vast disparity in wealth that they don't even have the money to be able to spend in your establishment, guess what? You're going to go belly up. But if you start giving people the money so they can afford to go out and eat in these places themselves, in this, you know, with the restaurants, but also every other, these other establishments. So we're looking at this because we've seen what's been happened, how Kansas and Louisiana have been decimated, among others, whereas Seattle's taking the opposite approach. Guess what? They're moving in a forward direction. It's working. So, yes, there may be some job displacement here and there, and that's obviously not a good thing when anybody loses a job, but the overall picture is improvement. And that's,
indeed,
that's a good thing.
All right. So let's now that we've talked about sort of the highlight and the low light of policy implications across the country, let's talk about this absolute crap show that is the Republican primary. Because
when we started talking about this, like, however, you know, 9 months ago, I don't know, I've lost track of time. It's like we're all in a warp of sorts here. Did you ever think it was even? I mean, even you and I, who've been through this stuff a lot. And it's really hard to surprise me because my expectations are so low. But did you even ever think we were going to get to this point?
I thought it was possible that we would get like a Cruz-like nominee. I thought Donald Trump would do great and wreak havoc in this race. But there is no way. I mean, this is the perfect storm. You know, like the idea that, you know, Donald Trump is going to land, and I think it's becoming more and more likely that this guy's going to get like 1,226 delegates.
Right.
And it is going to be the perfect crap show, and it's going to be just devastating because if there is, in fact, a contested convention, and, you know, it strikes me, without like even getting into like, you know, Trump's latest, sort of outrage, and we'll talk about that. But, I mean, this guy's unbalanced, I think is also becoming clear, but
he's, the more he talks, you know, and it's like, you see the patterns again and again. I remember there was a point in time where, you know, for me, I mean, hard to pinpoint that point in time, it didn't take very long. Well, I just couldn't even stand to listen to Sarah Palin talk because what she said was so ignorant and just so stupid and so pulled out of her, you know what. And that's what he's doing. He just pulls it out of his whatever and he makes things up and says things, none of which even appear. I mean, in his mind, if he thinks it's true or he heard it from somebody, it's true. So I don't actually even think he's necessarily standing up there and purposely lying. He's just used to the fact that this is what he's been able to do in business. And because daddy staked him with a large amount of money, he's been able to get away with it, which is he just makes stuff up and lies and obfuscates and sues people that get in the way and bankrupts people who he can bankrupt, you know. And this is the way he's just basically been a spoiled kid whose emotional maturity never passed about the fifth grade, nor did his use of language for that matter. And so, sometimes you can guess the answer to anything. Oh, yeah, I do that the best. I mean, you bring up, like, you know, Ginsu knives. I got the best Ginsu knives, the best ones. My friends tell me. I talked to somebody at the Ginsu plant. They said to me, you've got the best. I mean, it doesn't matter what the topic is. This is where he'll go. I mean, it's predictable what he'll say. It's predictable that it'll have absolutely no basis in fact, that it'll involve a lot of braggadocio.
All right,
a lot of word salad. And,
right.
I mean,
and I want to get
I'll say quickly, though. I just want to say quickly to what you said before. I underestimated that Trump would hold on to the point he's held on to. And that because if you remember way back when, although I don't think I did that badly, I was laughing when they were predicting that Jeb Bush was the front runner, which I never believed for one second. And said, this is a joke. I don't care how much money this guy has. They hate him. They hate his family. They hate what he stands for.
Right.
So I always thought, I predicted it back then, it was going to be Ted Cruz, even when everybody's saying Rubio and everybody's saying whatever.
Right.
And the reasons I gave at the time, most of me, I thought even the establishment eventually gritting their teeth to get behind him.
And they have.
Had to. And they largely have because of the other choices. But I will admit that, you know, I thought that in the end Cruz would prevail over Trump, and that looks like that will not happen.
Well, it is early yet. I mean, let's just go through this. I mean, I want to put, you know, just putting aside, you know, Trump's latest, let's give nukes to Japan and that we should punish women or we shouldn't punish women for abortions or whatnot. I'm the most, nobody's more pro anti-abortion than I am. I would strip women of all their sovereign rights. I mean, nobody's more against women than I am.
Nobody loves women more than me. I'm great with the women.
All right. So, but let's just game this out a little bit, because as much as people are talking about this, like we have now a front runner who, as of like a couple of weeks ago, may have been a 75% to 85% bet, according to all the sort of the numbers people, to get 1237. That's now gone into the low 60s, I think, according to Nate Silver. But remember now, he has a campaign manager who is under arrest and by all accounts could very well be convicted. I mean, from everything I'm reading, you know, the people who are sort of like, you know, do assaults are saying like, yeah, it's pretty rare that we get like four video angles of an assault. Like, this is going to be something we're going to be able to. So you've got Lewandowski, his campaign manager now, in the midst of when the fight is becoming, I think, the most intense it's probably been in some respects, is now spending at least a certain portion of his day trying to stay out of jail. And so so you have that happening. You have this fracture that's going on in the conservative media, because the reason why his campaign manager is going to jail is because he assaulted a supposed, in quotes, reporter from Breitbart. So this is going on. And what I think, you know, people are slowly starting to realize, like, I don't know that maybe in the early 70s, like, you know, maybe in the early 70s, but since you and I have been adults, Cliff, which is sadly a long time, particularly in my case, conventions are just
emotionally in your case.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm holding it off, but conventions are usually just like commercials, extensions of the campaign that has won the convention before they got to the convention. And it's just an extension of their campaign. So, you know, John Kerry comes in.
Lots of balloons falling from the ceiling.
But it's more than that.
Happy.
Like, John Kerry comes in, and 2 or 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out from the convention, they're already talking about, like, Kerry's people are taking over, and we're going to have it. It's going to be very military-themed. And we're going to get, you know, a bunch of his buddies to get up there, and we're going to make him a war hero. And
right.
Now, it may have been a mistake or whatnot, but my point is that
you want it to be all be on message with beautiful imagery, because it is just a big
but
commercial.
But these campaigns, these conventions,
you come out with a big bump.
The conventions, the content, okay, not just like the even part of the operations are a function of campaign personnel. Like the convention,
that's right.
There's nobody to go ahead and say like, we want these speakers or those speakers, or we want to time it based on this, because who gets to decide that? Like, there, you know, it's not like there is these sort of like neutral officials who float down from above and they don't have a vested interest in what's going on. You're any RNC official is going to be a blank guy. Like, I'm for Ted Cruz, or they all have opinions. They all want their guy to win. If it's not even been settled by the time we get to the convention, they're all going to do things. They're in charge of the operations.
Like, and I mean, Rens Priebus is going to have to try to be a mediator of sorts, even though, he may support one over others, and I think the whole thing will be kind of hysterical, because you're right.
But I'm saying,
theater.
Yes, it's
this
theater.
Thing is theater.
But there's no, usually the director of this theater is appointed by the campaign. And now there's
no
one
I
to
know
appoint
what you're saying.
And even the producer is usually appointed by the campaign. And
so I don't know how they figure that out, but the best part of the whole thing is that they project what is almost entirely a fake image, no matter what the party is, because at least half the people in that room or that stadium hate the other half for various reasons. But because somebody's won, it's the projected image of unity and happiness, and as I said, balloons dropping, and we're the ones who are going to win the future, and all the fire is turned on the opponents. Here, you don't know what the hell is going to happen.
No, and listen.
Like, I mean, they're prominent radio personalities. Get up. Glenn Beck's ripping into Donald Trump and you know, or Mark Levin or whoever the hell. And then Laura Ingraham's ripping into Ted Cruz. And I mean, and that's just them. The elected officials, obviously, who knows what, you know, what they're doing. And frankly, at this point, you know, there's so much acrimony around there. You know, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio kind of hate everybody.
Yeah, I mean, Rubio's sure keeping holding on to his delegates as a way of trying to starve Trump. But
and Jeb Bush has endorsed Cruz, but nobody believes that endorsement. He's hoping that he did that so that there would be an open convention and then he could support somebody else.
Right.
So this is like 68 or 72 or something. You know, I don't know. I mean, and then you've got Trump, of course, encouraging violence if he doesn't get the nomination. So I mean,
let me put this to you, Cliff.
You couldn't hope for anything better. Nothing. If you're a Democrat, than to have 4 days on TV where everybody wants to watch and the ratings are through the roof because Donald Trump's there, and because nobody knows what's going to happen. It's actually a reality show, and it's going to show complete disunity and all the worst.
It's going to be worse than that.
Guys are going to be.
It's going to be worse than that. I mean, I'm telling you, like they've got to get 110 people in the room before the convention to decide on the convention rules, okay? And nobody knows who those people are going to be, and they're all going to be a Cruz guy, a Trump guy, a Paul Ryan guy. I mean, this is going to be such, I think, a massive...
And you know what the better part is even than that? It's because these guys, because of who they are by definition, because of the politics that they have purposely played upon since Nixon, which is the politics of resentment and the politics of conspiracy, and that somebody's always screwing you over.
Yes.
It's an academic, it's a member of the establishment, it's a member of the media. So anybody who votes for the other guy, they're going to claim it's a conspiracy and it's screwing them over and it's been stolen from them. It's inevitable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's no way Cruz and Trump don't do that because they're both equally terrible people.
Now here's a question. Here's a question I have for you. I have two questions for you, okay? One is... If he doesn't get 1237, they're going to suspend, they're going to change the rules, as is, you know, happens every year. These 110 people get together, they change the rules for the convention, you know, for the sake of the eventual nominee. Now, here we don't know who the eventual nominee is, so they would change the rules to allow for people who didn't even run in the race to possibly be the nominee. But here's the other question. What's to stop them from saying that 1237 is not the real number? That the real number, we've done some more number crunching, and really, it's not that you need a majority, it's you need a majority plus 5%. I mean,
right. Well,
they theoretically
these guys also,
could
another
do
thing,
this.
That's beauty, they don't respect tradition or cultural norms in any way.
Well, no, this is just a naked fight for power now.
Well, the 1237 only matters whether you respect it.
Exactly.
The minute you say I don't believe in 1237, you don't have to give a reason. I think 1237 is wrong. I think it's a conspiracy by liberal scientists who believe in global warming. It should be 1215.
Or it could be 1242, and this is going to be.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, this is going to be such a shite show. It's going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be so fun. I'm so excited about it. Now, let me also ask you this: if I'm 40 years old in 1972, how old am I today?
Somewhere around twice as old.
I'm in my 80s. Where's the institutional memory that knows how to do these things? Like, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to wheel Bob Dole out and like, Bob, can you give us some advice on how to handle this? Like, there's no institutional memory to operate something like this. There's nobody.
I mean, the last time I can think of, right, at least in the Republican Party, there was at least. But it was not done this way. It was done all by people who got along with each other in back rooms with 76 with Ford and Reagan.
Yeah.
And that was nothing like what went on in 64 and 72. Like it's a different beast. So
right.
Even those guys, and frankly, even that's long enough ago. But again, Reagan and Ford, whatever you think of their politics, were different personalities. You know, they both were people that wanted to unify their party under different messages, but they weren't the types of people to get up
oh, no, this is a completely...
cry and
I mean, there's nobody. There's nobody who could. John Boehner got kicked out by these people. I mean, there's nobody who's going to be able to broker anything with these people. There is such acrimony; it's so deep. Now, here's one more flag I want to plant, and you know, we're obviously going to have plenty of time to talk more about this stuff. But this occurred to me today, right? So we're looking at a situation where the Republican, to the extent that there is any Republican entity out there that could even express a desire as to what they want as a sort of like a in the best interests of the Republican brand. Okay. And there's some people out there who exist, but they don't necessarily have any power. But their situation is this: Trump becomes the nominee and takes down the Republican Senate and hurts them desperately in the House because, you know, you've got so many Republicans who are leaving, or they Trump does not become the nominee and Paul Ryan comes in and all the Trump people stay away, or Trump gets on the ballot in a half a dozen states that will screw up the Republican Party. But they think that they can, even though they're going to lose the presidency, because I don't know that there's a scenario where they actually think they could win the presidency at this point. But we can maybe mitigate some of the House seats. We probably lose the Senate, but at least we control the party apparatus, because, you know, Trump gets a hold of
the
party apparatus.
They control the party apparatus, and they'd want to make sure that Paul Ryan just, if he's the guy, just runs and campaigns in a sort of half dozen most important states where they have to ensure that they can prop up their Senate candidates, and in some cases even some of the marginal congressional ones if they happen to be in the same states. I mean, that's their ballgame.
Now, here's the thing.
At that point,
if the Republicans lose House seats, forget the idea that the Democrats could get control of the House. I think that's a long shot, basically, because the Democrats
are
not prepared for this.
But I saw a really great analysis that if you look at even the ones that are sort of strong lean or whatever, the furthest one over, and as opposed to solid, if even those where they usually win by 8 points or whatever, if this was a complete disaster or 10 points, whatever, that the Democrats could get within something like 8 seats in the House.
Yeah, but there's like 40 races already where the signing deadline's gone. There's no candidates. But put that aside for a moment.
That's a good point.
If Republicans lose House seats, that it will do one thing, definitely, and that will increase the strength of the Freedom Caucus, because they're
That's
not the
point.
People
yeah.
who are going to lose seats. So, in other words, my point is, as much of a crap show as it's been, it's only getting worse after this. I'm sorry to tell everybody.
And it's the same thing in the Senate.
Yep.
I mean, think about this for a second. As bad as they are now, when if you look at any legislation that passed under Obama, even the ones that were rejected at first, but eventually, like Violence Against Women Act, which couldn't pass and then finally did, barely, some of the things like that, you'll find people who signed on to those things eventually. You'll find Mark Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find Rob Portman. You'll find Kelly Ayotte. You'll find, you know, for the most part, the 6 to 8 people who you could call not moderates. Let's call them what they are:
non-loons,
conservatives. Who,
right?
Yeah, conservatives who aren't crazy. Out of that caucus, and I would say Mark Kirk almost qualifies as a moderate. He's the only one in the Senate. He's gone no matter what almost
yep.
this time. If Portman's gone, you know, and which I certainly hope he is, and a few of the others, Ayotte is gone and whatever, basically you've got a bunch of
Heritage Foundation
draggers.
The Heritage Foundation.
And Susan, you've got the Heritage Foundation plus, like, you know, Jeff Flake on Cuba and a few things,
right.
Susan Collins and a couple things, and that's only because they're not up until, like, 18 or whatever it is when they could equally be. I mean, that's what you've got, you know? I mean, so the Senate's going to become a complete nut house, too.
Nut house. All right. Well, Cliffy, we'll talk more about this in the weeks to come. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, man. Take
all right.
care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Boy, it's just going to be such a crap show, folks. Such a, I mean, oy. Oy. All right. You know what we need to do? We need to do a little palate cleansing to celebrate our 12-year anniversary. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, the great Janine Garofalo.
Take me out tonight, where there's music and there's people and they're young and alive. Driving.
devil and I want to see light. Driving in your car, oh please don't drop me home, because it's not my home, it's their home and I'm welcome no more.
All right, I got this. I'm in a little bit of a connection problem.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Who's calling, please?
It's Sam Cedar. I'm actually calling for...
Samuel?
Well,
Samuel Cedar? Oh, my goodness. I haven't heard from you in the dog's age. Why are you calling this number?
Well, I must have dialed the wrong number. Is this...
I'm Airbnb-ing from some horrible lesbian. I'm Airbnb-ing... trying to call this... some horrible lesbian, because I don't know who lives here, but I'm Airbnb-ing Samuel.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. Is this?
It's Kathy.
Catherine Harris. Almost
Samuel.
Senator. Oh my gosh!
I can't believe that this is Kismet.
This is Kismet.
I was actually calling
my co-host from the Majority Report back in 2004, and in many respects. We launched our show.
Does she live in an apartment in New York City?
She does.
That's who I must be. Is she a horrible lesbian?
No, she's not horrible. She's not lesbian. Not that there's anything wrong with being a horrible lesbian.
Lesbian and also Jewish, but that's not important.
No.
Samuel, I'm in New York.
What?
I can't believe this. I'm going to be at Jonathan Garlick's.
Jonathan Garlick's? What?
Gothieri has a restaurant called Jonathan Garlick's, and we're going to a White Lives Matter rally.
A White Lives Matter rally.
White Lives Matter. I'll be there with Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise.
And Marcus Bachman.
Marcus Bachman. That's...
Yes, and the plus-size governor of New Jersey, Christopher Christie. He's a plus-size governor. He's voluptuous and softy. And if he was on Say Yes to the Dress, they'd say, embrace your curve, Chris. And he does. He embraces his curve, belted up high, pleated. Pleated and flat front would be so much more forgiving, Samuel.
Really?
Marcus says that every day. Marcus says he should wear flat front, but he doesn't.
What?
But you know Apple. He's an apple body type, and that's as an apple, that's the worst one to be, I can tell you.
He's almost like
an
apple.
You know, pears get away with murder. They just throw on a skirt, and out the door they go. No one's the wiser, but as an apple... It's unwieldy. It's a lot of meat up top, like Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife. Do you know?
I'm not totally familiar. I should...
Much meat up top. I mean, you can wear an oversized shirt and leggings, but they know. They know. But I will say this for Chris Christie, because he's a dear friend. I want to say something nice. He's the only candidate, or former candidate.
Right.
More's the pity, former candidate.
Yes.
In a very crowded field of Republicans who cannot be successfully eaten by an anaconda.
I hadn't thought about it. They eat people,
Samuel. Watch Nat Geo. They drop from trees. They start at the head. Down they go, but their jaws only open 180 degrees.
Well, He'd
be the last man standing at a pancake meet and greet in South America.
That's right. I mean, I guess, you know, it's surprising that never really came up as an attribute.
I know. That is no small thing, Samuel. No. Now, Bobby Jindal, God bless his heart, he would have been low-hanging fruit.
For an anaconda, of course. He would
for
have
an
probably,
anaconda. Marco Rubio, that Paul Ryan.
Right.
But maybe the anaconda would have choked on that copy of Atlas Shrugged he never read.
Well, now, let me just... Catherine Harris,
yes,
let me
it's
just...
It's so good to speak to you, Sam. I can't believe this that you would dial that horrible lesbian's number and I would answer.
I'm shocked.
That's Airbnb. Sharing economy.
Sharing economy. Now, I should just tell people, some of our younger listeners may not be aware of your history. You were the Secretary of State who presided over the Gore v. Bush election in Florida.
I was also in The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
You were also in. No, I saw.
I was also a person who saw it.
Oh, you saw Truth in Cats and Dogs.
The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
I was part of the team that brought you George W. Bush with the late Antonin Scalia. God bless him. White power.
Yes, it is a shame that he's passed away. And people don't realize that you were a congresswoman and you also ran for Senate.
And I was a winner. White lives matter.
Totally.
They really do. That's why we have to stop El Nino and Chipotle and those Taco Bell breakfast defectors. We have got to stop El Nino, Chipotle, and Taco Bell breakfast defectors and divergence because white lives matter.
Wait, divergence? I think
divergent.
You're talking about the movie.
I'm talking about the documentary.
The documentary Divergent? I'm not aware of that. That's not.
Of course, you're not aware of it. We have to stop El Nino.
The weather
making
pattern.
Wind and rain on God-fearing white Americans and Chipotle, taking down an American a burrito at a time.
Wait, now,
and then the Taco Bell breakfast defectors.
Now, let me ask you something.
They're thinking outside the bun, Sam. They're thinking outside the bun, and they're living moss, and we can't have it.
They're living in mosques? Did you say?
They're living moss. Dig the potatoes out of your ears, Samuel. Nothing changes, does it? You can't hear a thing
that
Kathy says to you. You can't hear a thing.
Now, Catherine Harris, is there...
Let me
just ask you this. So when you come up for a White Lives Matter protest, as you have...
Yes.
Stop
El
Nino. I don't understand.
I'm here with Marcus, Gary Sinise, Christopher Christie, Samuel Hagar.
Sammy Hagar?
We are going to be winner chicken dinners. We're going to Flavortown, Sam. We're rolling out.
Now, where are you on?
Diners, drive-ins, and white people.
Now, are you on tour? Is this some type of tour that you're taking? Or have you been to other places?
Yes, we're touring every Guy Fieri restaurant.
Guy Fieri. I see. And so where
off
is...
Off the chain, off the hook. What's wrong with your inner ear, Samuel?
I just am not familiar. I just don't go out to eat that much, I guess.
Oh, my God. White power.
Now...
Stop Chipotle.
Stop. Okay.
And we got to talk more about punishing women who get abortion, Sam. Now, we have a movement afoot here. We have vans waiting in Times Square outside of Jonathan Garlick's, waiting to take women who have had abortions to see My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. That'll show them.
So
that's
you're,
punishment.
You're
Sam.
Suggesting that...
We are going to make them see My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
Now, so you're saying that women...
They'll
should...
never abort again.
Well, okay. I mean, so you're basically rounding them up into concentration theaters, if you will.
If that's what you want to call it, you know, I just call it punishment.
Punishment.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
Was that a bad
movie?
And
this is not a criticism of that lovely Nia Vardalos, who's very attractive in person, Sam.
Have you met her?
She seems very nice. She has heart, Sam. She's got a big heart. But, I mean, have you seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2? That's punishment. I don't know what Trump is thinking about, but I'll tell you, that'll do it.
So, now, how are you having time in between the schedule of all the White Lives Matter protests that you would be able to go see movies? I mean,
I haven't had an abortion. What I'm saying is the women who have had illegal abortions have to go see
illegal
My
abortions.
Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
Abortion is legal
you don't even
in this
follow,
country.
Don't make me talk about Moshe Dayan again, because I'll do it.
Well, I mean, I would...
He something? In 1956, not only did he win the Oscar for The King and I, but he directed the Sinai campaign.
Yeah.
Moshe Dayan.
You always confuse
Moshe
Dayan with Yul Brynner. I don't, you know, they're not.
I am not.
They're
I'm
two
talking
different
about
people.
The same gentleman that was in Westworld and was blamed for botching the October War. It's not his fault. He was busy filming Westworld.
I don't think those are the same people. I'm quite sure of it, actually. I'm quite sure that you've... But that's okay. Now,
You would say
I'm,
that.
I know that people would be upset with me if I did not check in on your QVC line of clothing that the last we saw. That was years ago, but I don't know if you're still...
Well, yes, Sam, that's so wonderful that you would say that because... Oh, my God, I got so excited. My saliva went down the wrong pipe.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. It's not your fault, as far as I know. But Marcus
yes.
and Chris Christie have got a plus-size QVC line. They're also working with the late Gene Bice of Quaker Factory to make clothing for curvier people that need to embrace their curve, their one curve.
They're,
like Marcus and Chris Christie.
They're one those curve.
They're voluptuous well, in a very spherical
I mean,
way.
Don't they have, I mean, two or four curves? I mean, like...
No, it's just the one. I mean, you've seen Chris Christie, haven't you? It's just the one. Do you see where he puts his belt?
It's just a continuous curve.
Have you seen him in a baseball uniform?
Sadly, yes, actually. I was shown
okay, that's
that
what I'm talking
pictures
about.
Yesterday. I don't know if people...
He's an apple, Samuel. He's an apple.
When was that baseball uniform? When did that happen? Was that recently? It was really one of the most disturbing things I've seen.
I don't know.
It's pretty explicit, that picture, actually.
I don't know, but...
He doesn't believe in like a cup.
Maybe Rance Priebus can... He'll know.
Well, okay, Rance Priebus. Are you?
Rance Priebus. He's the one who keeps the archival footage of all these things when he's doing when he wants to be mean spirited.
Now, let me ask you this, Catherine Harris. What are your feelings about? Do you have a candidate in this race that you are supporting?
I sure do.
Do you want to tell us who it is?
Sure, I do. Guy Fieri.
Guy Fieri.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking
winner,
about the
winner,
president.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
No,
we're rolling out, Samuel.
I'm talking about the...
He's money, baby.
I'm talking about the Republican presidential race.
So am I. It's anybody. It's a free... Is it not? It's nihilistic, Sam, like a transgender affirmative bathroom. Everything is permitted, apparently.
No, wait a second. So you're suggesting that Guy Fieri is laying in wait and... Going to swoop into a contested convention? Is that what? Is that what you're predicting?
I'm not only predicting it. I'm guaranteeing it, Samuel. I'm telling you, there is who is more likable, who is more on the edge. You know, he wears his wristbands on his forearm. Sometimes he wears his sunglasses backward.
So
I'm telling you,
had
it's
no
a
idea that
out there.
This is the first time I've heard anybody mention. Guy Fieri.
Well, that's because you have your finger just to the block away from the pulse. You don't even know what's going on.
Well, I guess. I mean, I haven't.
You don't even know about movies or anything like that. You don't know what's going on. You don't know anything about House Hunters, how much Marcus and I love to watch House Hunters and Property Brothers.
No.
This is not Beanbag, Sam.
No,
it's not Beanbag.
Have you seen?
They're not screwing around on House Hunters.
Now,
they want an open floor plan. They want to entertain. They love entertaining. They want to have a Caesar stone or a marble countertop, stainless steel appliances. They want an open floor plan. They want to be able to see their children whilst they're cooking in the kitchen. They also want a bonus room. And by the way, it's not a bonus room. It's a room that was always meant to be in the home. I don't, you know, who do they think they're fooling?
Well, okay, I'm sorry. I feel like we've gotten off track.
This is not Beanbag, Sam.
No, you watch the show with Marcus Buckman. It sounds like, I mean, I don't...
Oh,
not,
we love House Hunter, HGTV.
Well,
Fixer Upper. Flip or Flop, that's what I want to know. He loves Torek.
Now, wait a second.
I don't know if you've seen Torek's wife, but she wears too much makeup.
No, to be honest with you...
It ages her, Sam. She's a beautiful girl. It ages her. She wears too much makeup, like Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife, too much.
I, to be honest with you, I'm not, I can't picture either one of them in my mind's eye. But I have to ask you, you've been spending, it sounds like, a lot of time with Marcus Bachman. Where
are
you?
Oh, we've been busy. It's bees. We also want to stop the rise of the machines and that Ray Kurzweil singularity. We can't have it. We can't have the singularity being now or in 2045. We can't have machines being intelligent in the same way we can't have humans being intelligent. It's not good for the base.
No, but what? But where is Michelle Bachman in all of this? Are they? Is there?
Michelle, my belle. She's trying to shut down transgender affirmative bathrooms in the Pacific Northwest.
I didn't know that.
She spent a lot of time in Portland, Olympia, Seattle. Sometimes she goes up to Vancouver because there's nothing but transgender affirmative restrooms. Listen, it leads to moral decline. People will be stealing toilet paper. Next thing you know.
So you're suggesting that transgender people...
It invites moral decay and nihilism.
Oh, so you're not saying that they themselves will steal toilet paper, just it...
Oh, the atmosphere, it'll be rough. People say everything is permitted.
Everything is permitted. So
I'm going to steal for toilet paper now. I've got a backpack. I don't eat gluten. I'm not eating gluten. I'm stealing toilet paper. I'm a freegan, I'm a vegan, all of it. We might as well re-assassinate Leon Trotsky with an ice pick.
Sure, I understand how that, what the connection is between the veganism and the assassinating
Trotsky.
And
because Leon Trotsky wanted to keep the revolution contained, but Joseph Stalin believed it should be for the world. Was that Bobby Flay? I confuse them all the time. It's Iron Chef Joseph Stalin.
Are you traveling on your own? I mean, is there anybody helping you at different times?
Was it Bobby Flay who had a difficult relationship with Winston Churchill?
I got to imagine it was not him.
Or it was Joseph. Who's the one who was famously quoted as saying, "Remember, your eyebrows are sisters, not twins"? Who was that?
Remember was that your what?
Lenine, or was that Aaron Sanchez?
I don't know.
Iron Chef Aaron Sanchez.
Can I ask you how your health has been?
Oh my God, ship shape. Ever since Marcus has been having me juicing and
juicing,
fasting, juice fasting.
Juice fasting.
Wait, yeah, just we've been having juices with elixirs and tonics. Egg creams.
You've been juicing and fasting and eating egg creams.
Malted milk balls. That's all you're allowed to have, Sam, is green juice and malted milk balls and egg creams and lime Rickeys. It's a good old-fashioned cleansing.
This is...
good old tiny cleansing.
Yeah, that's a... It's like a. It is an old.
It's like a nostalgia.
A nostalgia.
Just lime Rickeys and like malted.
Like a 50s diner.
That's how you lose weight. You go to a sock hop.
A sock hop. So you're going to a sock hop. Okay, so.
Yeah, rock around the clock.
Now, can I just get your take?
Sit on it, Rich. Sit on it, Potsy.
Oh, you're making a Happy Days reference. Like, sit on it, Rich.
Sit on it.
Posse.
Hey.
And Ralph, sit on it, Ralph. And that's what.
Mrs. C. Funny as a crutch, Rich. What happened to your older son? Who? There used to be three children, Mrs. C. What happened to?
Well, now you're
Joni
you're
and Richie.
Really,
there was an older son, and then he disappeared.
He went to college and just never came back. Yeah, he never came back. Didn't particularly like being at the Cunninghams.
Apparently not, but they never spoke of him again.
So, I mean, that seems like is that something that you've been thinking about a lot lately? Because that happened.
What
a long
Happy Days?
Time. Yeah, Happy Days and.
Well, sometimes I think about how I wish that they didn't change the format from the first season. I wish they had stayed with film. I also wish they had stayed with Rock Around the Clock as the theme and not gone to the Happy Days. And then I think they became a little too... I liked it when the Fonz wore a windbreaker, not a leather jacket.
Interesting, interesting. So you felt...
I do think about that quite a bit, Samuel. I do. And I liked when MASH was on film. I liked it better before. And, you know, how long was the Korean War? My goodness, I had no idea that the Korean War went on for almost 15 years.
I feel like you've been watching like a lot of old repeats of stand-up or something. Like,
I don't know what you're
Evening
talking
at the Improv. I mean, these are old. These
are
old comedian jokes that Korea.
You know, what are you accusing me of? I mean, about Gilligan's Island. The professor, he could build a computer out of a coconut, couldn't fix a hole in a boat. Are you accusing me of hack jokes?
I mean, I just feel like I've heard these jokes from a.
No idea what you're talking about.
It may be my own.
Boy, George, do you really want to hurt me? Yes.
Well,
Samuel, I have to go. I can't believe.
No, I know. I can't believe
you phoned of all phone numbers.
It is
the one apartment I'm Airbnb-ing at. Yeah. For the White Lives Matter rally at Jonathan Garlick.
I am completely shocked to have reached you, but very happy to do so. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Majority Report, which is the show that I still am doing.
I remember. It's the show that I would speak to you from, and you couldn't hear a word I was saying.
Well, I'm not sure I understand.
In the early 2000s.
In the early 2000s, that's right. This show launched 12 years ago on this day in 2004.
Also on this day in 2004 is when Marcus got his eye lift.
I did not know that.
Yes, but so it's historical all the way around.
It was with my co-host, Janine Garofalo.
Don't even say that horrible lesbian's name.
I think that you
are... You should see how much dust was on the floor when I got here. The least she could have done was Swiffer. So, if you're going to Airbnb, for crying out loud.
The chances...
For crying out loud, the least you can do is Swiffer.
Of you Airbnb-ing her apartment are so, it seems to me...
The chances...
Slim.
What are the odds? I guess about 50-50, apparently.
No, not 50-50. I mean, I think they're really much greater than that, the odds. I mean, slimmer.
Well, apparently not. Look, I answered the phone, didn't I?
Well, yeah, no, you did. I just think it's really shocking that you're there, but I guess that is...
If I star 69 you now, I can prank call you, and I would, but you would ruin it. I'd say something like, hello, do you have Prince Albert in a can? And then you'd say Prince Albert instead of playing along, and then I wouldn't be able to say better let him out before he suffocates. Or if I would say, hello... Is your refrigerator running?
How would anybody?
And you say refrigerator, and then I'd say, "Well, you better go catch it." See, it wouldn't work, Sam, because you're such a buffoon on the phone.
Well, I don't understand how someone's supposed to answer if you say, "Do you have Prince Albert in a can?" I would say, "No."
Well, I would, of course, if you were a tobacconist.
If I was a tobacconist,
it would be different.
It
Samuel,
would.
Of course. Now, if that was your vocation, you were a tobacconist, it would make more sense.
But that's not my fault that I'm not.
That.
I don't sell tobacco products.
Oh, see what I'm saying?
No.
See what I'm saying? You keep planting your flag all in the middle. You just want to plant your flag and plant your flag and plant your flag and mess up a good prank phone call.
Well,
Now, surely you would understand if I said, and I'm sorry I called you Shirley. But you understand what I said. Is your refrigerator running, right? You would understand. You have a refrigerator, do you not?
Yes, we have a refrigerator here. It's a small...
Now, if I would say, let's pretend. Okay, shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. Okay, hello. Pretend you just answered the phone.
Hello?
Hi, is your refrigerator running?
Yes.
You better go catch it.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
See, that kind of thing, it would work with a regular person and not a communist.
You know, but here is the little sticky, we turn it off during the show. So if you've called during
the show. Turn what off, the phone?
No, the refrigerator, because it makes a buzzing noise. So,
all
I
right,
mean,
well, let's try it. Is your refrigerator buzzing? Well, you better turn it off.
No, it is off. Well,
this has been a real hoot.
It's been a real hoot for me, and I've really enjoyed it.
I can't believe this happened. You made my day. You made my day, sort of.
I wish you... I mean, I would like to wish you good luck at the White Lives
at
Matter.
At the White Lives Matter, Sam. White Lives Matter. At Jonathan Garlick.
You can understand.
Gary Sinise.
support that that thing. But it's good that you and Gary Sinise are having time together. I think that's nice.
And Marcus Bachman.
Of course. You guys
Gary
are like
Sinise,
the X-Men of, well.
The Age of Ultron.
Yes. All right. Well, Senator Kathryn Harris, thank
Kathy,
you.
Kathy, call me Kathy.
Kathy Harris. Thank you.
All right, Samuel, this has been, I can't tell you, I'm so tickled. Honestly, I'm so tickled. Marcus is going to flip his wig, literally, when he hears.
Does he? Wait, are you saying that Marcus Bachman has a wig? Okay.
Keep that. That's something supposed to be between Marcus and his maker, but I'm telling you, it's the worst.
Oh.
It's the worst, especially from behind when he's sweating or if he hugs someone in his suit, makes it ride up a little bit. In the back.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, Kathy Harris, thank you so much for calling in. So
thank
great
you,
to hear your
Samuel.
Voice.
Thank you, Samuel. And if you talk to that horrible lesbian, you tell her she better Swiffer.
Okay. I will tell her she needs to Swiffer. Hopefully, I will be able to. When she gets back into town, we'll have her on the program.
Yeah. I'm going to leave her. Marcus said he's going to leave her a little present in one of the restrooms. that'll be a fine how do you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, that will be. That would be... I'm not sure she wouldn't appreciate, actually.
She's talking about little soap.
She really knew it was Marcus Bachman's poop in her toilet. I think she probably enjoyed that.
Little soaps. Little kind of soap.
No, I got you.
Shaped in the form of Barry Goldwater.
Okay, well, thank you so much for spending the time with us. It was great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you, Sam.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
You can hang up the phone now.
You can hang up the phone now.
Are you repeating?
Are you repeating?
You fucking what
hello?
I'm saying? Are you just repeating what I'm saying?
Are you just, hello? Is your refrigerator running?
Okay. Well, we should say goodbye
okay.
now. So.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Goodbye, Kathy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. We just need
okay,
you to hang
then.
Up because I can't disconnect.
Okay.
You.
Good to talk to you.
Okay, great.
Good to talk to you, Sam.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on. It was great
thank
to you
so
run into
much
you accidentally.
For accidentally calling that horrible list.
Yes, you're welcome. For
thank you. You're welcome.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Okay.
So long. It's great
okay,
to.
Then. Great to speak to you.
Oh my God.
Tickled.
So long.
Oh my God. Well, God bless everyone.
All right. Maybe
Ray
we should.
Ray Kurzweil, the singularity better be not now.
Can we? We'll
not
just,
good for the bass. Singularity right. Not good for the bass.
Okay. All right. Well, we will talk to you later. Bye bye. We're gonna turn down the volume on that, and we'll just hopefully she's gone.
Thank you.
All right. All right. We just hey, Kathy.
Okay. All right.
But all right. Bye bye. Now I'm trying to. Just hopefully, like, just give it, like, 5 or 10 more seconds, and we can put that back up, and I can call into the...
Okay, thank you.
Oh, no. All right. Bye-bye.
Hello.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay.
All right, we will talk to you
all
later.
All right, just give it a minute. I'm so tickled. This is fun.
No, I know. It's okay.
This is fun.
Bye-bye, Kathy.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Oh, is it that I need to hang up for you to
yeah,
continue
yes,
with your
yes,
show?
Yes, actually, yes.
Is
yes.
that what's happening?
That's right. Yes, please.
So I actually have to hang up the phone, or you cannot plant another flag in some thought bubble of some kind.
That's correct.
You can't botch a word or miss a reference
no.
or mispronounce something.
No, I can't. No, I'm unable to do that until you.
You're unable to do that if I don't hang up this phone.
That's correct.
Is that what's happening?
Yes, that is.
Who is it that you need to speak to?
Well, I was going to call into the other to the call system to take phone calls from people.
From just regular people.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So
actually,
you don't have an alternative way for them to get to you.
Well, you know, Kathryn Harris, since we still apparently have you on the line, why don't we play this clip from the very first Majority Report ever, ladies and gentlemen? This is the first. What was it? Like 2 minute clip. Okay, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. This is the first Majority Report on commercial radio as of March 31st, 2004, at 7 p.m. No, this would have been at 6. This would have been at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
The Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar. The left has never been so right. Or so sexy. The Majority Report.
Good evening and welcome to The Majority Report. I'm Janine Garofalo.
Oh, that's horrible. I hate that girl.
And,
stop
we are
it.
7 minutes and 39 seconds.
I
want to
hear
late.
Her voice.
Please
don't I don't
hold
want to hear it.
But it is,
Samuel,
as always,
I don't want to hear
Wednesdays
it.
Here. So I am
Dan, you shut it. You shut it.
And taking
it.
Your
we'll pause
seven
it. We'll pause
time.
It. All right. You're getting very upset. All right. So
I can't believe you got Archer to do the voiceovers.
Yes, that's very astute of you. Yes, it is the
that's
voice
amazing.
Of,
you got
of Archer.
Archer to do the voiceovers.
We did. We did. Yes, Archer and the voice
I hate
of Bob.
Who is that horrible lesbian talking? It, that's well, disgusting, that was Sam. I almost hung up the phone. But then you would have been able to go forward.
That's right. Well, maybe we should play more of it. Let's play a little bit
well,
more.
But you
it's
know what?
Time.
And you're creaseless.
I have creases.
You stop it.
I have creases. I also can't hear myself in my own headphones.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if that's normal first day stuff, so I'm hoping they...
Janine, which I think will become apparent to our listeners, to you, our listeners, soon, is a bit of a neo-Luddite.
I just realized I had my dial turned down.
Stop calling me.
Yes,
it was turned down. So it was that's what we call a technical failure, and some heads are going to roll, people. Heads are going to roll here. I know it's Casual Wednesday.
It's actually the first time Janine has actually been able to turn a dial. Like you, this, that's like new technology for you, dials, right?
Yes, that's more my germ phobia.
You used to just do switches.
Yeah, I don't have my white gloves. But anyway, enough of this chitter-chatter. Let's talk about who's going to be on the show tonight. We're going to be talking to activist and co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. He's also the founder of TrueMajority.org and business leaders for priorities, sensible priorities.
Good leadership.
Good leadership. And congeniality. We'll also be talking to Atrios, Uber blogger Atrios. We're going to be talking to funny man Dave Chappelle and also funny man Bill Maher.
Bill Maher.
Yeah, there you have it. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I guess we managed to get Catherine Harris off the phone. She could not stand to hear the original Majority Report. Well, that was a pleasant and disturbing surprise to actually try and reach. And sadly, we can't talk to Janine Garofalo because apparently she's out of town. Did not tell me. Gave me the wrong number. Gave me her home number, and it was she had Airbnb'd it to Catherine Harris. Can you imagine if those two got into a room together? If Janine knew that her home was housing Catherine Harris, she would be enraged. She would be enraged. Just so angry. So angry. So, all right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Oh, I guess maybe that's silly. Is that silly? Should we just do a freebie?
Let's do a tight freebie.
You mean end in 90 seconds?
Yeah. Yeah, let's end in 90 seconds. That would be amazing.
That's not going to
happen. Why don't we end like in 20 minutes?
At well, I think we'll probably end by 2. How's
all
that
right,
sound
2 is
everybody?
The typical time. Well, why don't we give him a freebie? What the hell?
Wow, Mike is really trying to kiss your butts, ladies and gentlemen. He must want you to sign up for Two Dope Boys.
Boom.
So he's given you a freebie Thursday. An extra 30 minutes of material, ladies and gentlemen, to enjoy. You'll hear our phone calls. You'll hear our IMs. Maybe we'll just do IMs today and no phone calls because you know, we've been neglecting phone calls for so long.
Can I mention IMs. One other Dope Boys thing really briefly?
You can go to subscribe2db.com to subscribe for that show.
143 rankings and 84 reviews.
Oh, wait.
Thank you.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Bernie Sanders, who really does seem to not be able to process how insane the Republican presidential primary has become. I mean, and this is, I say this as a compliment, because sane people have a tough time doing it. Now, we're able to do it because, you know, we haven't invested our entire adult life in trying to promote policies and enact policies and govern a city or represent a constituency to make America better for more people, right? So we don't have that level of earnestness that a guy like Bernie Sanders has exhibited over the course of, say, the past 30 years or so. So when he actually stops, because he's obviously running a race, he's not paying too much attention to the Republicans. He's paying some, but he's not paying too much. When you can hear the sort of just the shock, like he just can't believe that he's in the same business, if you will, as these people running for president on the Republican side. Here he is talking to Rachel Maddow.
Both parties to be strong and sane in order to make this system work.
Well, first of all, I don't necessarily take at face value what they say. I think at the end of the day, they probably will come together. But the other point, I think the deeper point, Rachel, is the Republican Party today has moved very, very far to the right. They are way out of touch with where the American people are. And I think if we had a media in this country that was really prepared to look at what the Republicans actually stood for, rather than quoting every absurd remark of Donald Trump, talking about a Republican Party talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the top 0.2%, cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, a party which, with few exceptions, doesn't even acknowledge the reality of climate change, let alone do anything about it, a party which is not prepared to stand with women in the fight for pay equity, a party that is not prepared to do anything about a broken criminal justice system or a corrupt campaign finance system. I think, to be honest with you, and I just don't, you know, say this rhetorically, this is a fringe party. It is a fringe party. Maybe they get 5-10% of the vote. What you really need in this country is a progressive party standing with the working class and the middle class of this country. And yes, a conservative party that, you know, has, you know, is more fiscally conservative. That is where we should be as a country. What the Republican Party today now is a joke, maintained by a media which really does not force them to discuss their issues. So that's my 2 cents on that.
Well,
there you have it. And, you know, I think what Bernie is doing there, too, and I think it's very important for us to keep in mind, because this is, as much as Donald Trump gets up there and says insane things, it is a reflection of the voters of the Republican Party. I mean, let's be honest. If you strip out the parts of Trump, explicitly calling for violence, right, at his campaign stops, and, you know, having a campaign manager who assaults a reporter and, you know, retweeting, you know, pictures of his wife, you know, from, you know, photo shoots and bad pictures of Ted Cruz. If you expunge the, like, fifth grader stuff, he is, in many respects, either pure conservative and Republican values, or maybe even in some cases, a little bit more sane than them. Like, we shouldn't have gone into Iraq, or saying this sort of ridiculous idea of George Bush was the president on 9/11. I mean, that's heresy. That's the heresy. So
here's the deal. I'm tired of you saying that my brother was president. It's
exactly.
Totally inappropriate.
So Sanders is basically making a very good point, which is, you know, let's not forget, Donald Trump may be a lunatic, but the real lunatics are the base of the Republican Party. And that's a pretty, at least within the context of that party, a broad base. There is... You know, there is 30-40% of them just who are just pure and pure, these type of folks. What else should we play here? This one is pretty good in terms of, I don't know. He was with Chris Matthews. Maybe we'll play later. I just can't handle it right now. Daryl T, I love her. Jude, Jesus Christ, Janine is on point today. Bravo, good lady. I'm a Bernie supporter, but figured any Democrat challenger would beat Trump until the town hall last night. Hillary made a comment that Trump is the same as all the other Republicans based on policy, and that's the moment I realized she could actually lose. People aren't following Trump because of policy. They're following him because they want to blame the others, and they're mesmerized by his speaking style that panders to a fourth-grade level. They think he's the Republican answer to the establishment political system that Hillary is ensconced in. This doesn't look good for her. I mean, I got to tell you, we can have our own personal feelings, but I mean, if you look at the numbers and the polling and the idea that the forces that would be aligned against Trump, it's really hard to imagine that any Democrat would lose to Donald Trump. I mean, really hard. I'm not saying it's impossible. And, you know, for a long time, I thought it was probably a 20 or 30% chance that Clinton could lose to Trump. I would put that down now closer to, you know, 15%, between 10 and 15%. Now, that's possible, but Jay-Z, Cliff, the Smiths, and Janine, it's a canny show today, like bon anniversaire. Until this Catherine Harris bit, I didn't realize the connection between the Republican base and the Assassin's Creed franchise. hey, shut up. Catherine Harris is the best. Hal, happy 12th. Catherine Harris. Ogajik, happy 12th. Keep up the great work. Love you. And Janine's Catherine Harris. Mailman, is there any solace you can give me in the fact that the new CBS poll shows a large majority of Americans still support torture and think we need to move towards conservative policies? I'm just blown away. I guess I live in a bubble, and I can say this with as much love as I can muster. The American people are totally effed up. I haven't seen the conservative policies, but, you know, the torture stuff, why wouldn't they? Honestly, who paid a price for that? A couple of privates? I mean, when the president of the United States, when the institutional apparatus, when the judiciary system, when all of these things that are supposed to adjudicate this, Senate torture report not released, the idea that the CIA was taking naked photographs of prisoners before they would send them to wherever it was, Egypt, to be tortured, I don't think it's made any of the nightly news at all. It barely made any, even online, I've heard barely anybody talk about it. I mean, when these things are ignored by all of the mechanisms in society that are supposed to hold people accountable, is it any wonder that the message to the broader public is that it's appropriate?
It's the same thing with Wall Street.
Yeah.
Moral hazard.
Of course.
Don't prosecute people. Why would they not do it again? And then on the torture level, I think.
But it's not a question of why would they not do it again. It's a question of, like, what message are you sending to the rest of society?
Why would society not sanction it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, that is it's a big issue. Wow. So apparently, just an hour ago, Erdogan was giving a talk at Brookings Institute. Have you seen this?
Yep.
And fistfights were breaking out.
Well, supposedly one of his bodyguards...
tried to make America great again?
Well, they're making Turkey great again.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah. Sort of like a hybrid. If they were brilliant and more self-made... More brilliant than Carson and more self-made than Trump. He's kind of the equivalent of those two fused together.
Joseph Ballin, why don't liberals try to spin the words the way Republicans do, like these so-called religious freedom laws that far-right wingers are pushing? Why don't liberals start calling them right to discriminate laws or voter suppression laws for these voter ID laws or gun protection for gun control laws? I can't stress this enough. It's not just being right about the issue. It's the way you sell something that counts as well. I mean, I think there, you know, that's always been a sort of perennial argument, right? I mean, is the left messaging properly? Well, they had Lakoff and Drew Weston and, I mean, others. I mean, I think there's something to it. We can be a little more clever. A lot of people feel like the Affordable Care Act should have been just Medicare Part E. Chris, the son of Justice Scalia, just blocked the increase in capital requirements in Dodd-Frank. This is going to be the Dutch boy and the dam. I will check that out. What? That link is opening up in my Opera browser now? Great. What a mess my computer is. Dave, congrats on 12 years, Sam. I've listened to almost every episode since around 2011. I love what you guys do. Keep up the work. Good work. Thank you. Majority Report listener. Oh, God, I don't think I need to hear about Christie's camel toe. I did Judy Gold's podcast yesterday, and it was because of whoever I am me or tweeted me. They tweeted Judy, and Judy had, I guess, she, you know, and I do, I, she wanted to have me on, and then it just occurred to her, have me on. And during the podcast, she showed me these pictures, which I had not seen, of Chris Christie, and it's not just a camel toe. There's a corn on that toe, if you know what I mean. Have you seen the picture, Michael? Did it just give you a migraine?
Seeing that picture.
You know what? Go pull it up.
I think I got... I got the migraine right now, and I'm leaving early.
Pull it up. It is really... Judy made me...
Chris Christie.
Made me a baseball uniform. Made me explain to her what I thought I was seeing. And I'm pretty sure I was seeing the whole thing. And you might want to sort of...
I'm angry at you.
Zoom in. Zoom in.
This isn't the first picture... like this.
That is so grotesque.
First one I've seen. What's the first? Maybe you don't look.
Oh, my God, man. I'm not now even hamming it up for the show. That's really disgusting.
Dude. It's really disgusting.
Now we know what Kelly does. Like her Japanese porn sites that feature Chris Christie in
No, I mean,
outfits.
I don't know. It's just, you know, I think I speak for many women when I look, yeah.
Chris Christie.
Oh, God.
What?
Oh, God.
Wait, what was all that? These, can we get breaking news music?
It's not about Chris Christie. I'm saying in general.
I speak for many women when I say I look.
No, Michael, it's
Chris
women.
Christie.
You got to
No. Don't try to deflect with the dumb mispronunciation thing. Why do you look at Chris Christie
it's
pictures?
It's not Chris Christie.
Did you look at the Chris Christie?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
Oh, but I've seen this before.
What do you mean you've seen this before?
This is not the first time I've seen Chris Christie's weird package.
Front bottom.
Okay, this isn't the first time I've seen it in a picture.
Take a look at the closely.
That is the most.
No, I've seen it before.
I'm not sure you call it a package. I think you call it a letter.
Right. Okay. So it's.
And by the way, stop tweeting this at me.
I'm not saying women
are
have.
Are people tweeting it at you? Oh, that's awesome.
Women have Chris Christie fetishes. I'm just saying that, like.
Wait, what?
Women.
What? We should get them on the show.
Oh. What are you talking about? Oh.
Women look at that area.
No, I get that women
frequently.
Look at that area, but not on Chris Christie.
But in a picture where he's wearing a baseball uniform, my eyes went directly there, and I was like, oh, my God.
You need help.
I think we all need help, some help now.
I
Majority Report, listen.
He needs
listening.
Help. He's the one, he needs, like, a food intervention.
All these GOP talking about privatizing. The VA should be made to address the Wounded Warrior Project at one of the most corrupt charities. Neff. Mazel, much love. Been with you since day one. Don't forget History Steak to end the show with peaches. Oh, that's right. But you know what? On day one, we did not end the show that way. Matt, now, do you know the story of peaches? Because this is something that Matt would like. We had peaches on early, the first week, maybe. And it was a pre-taped interview. And I had no idea who Peaches was. And Janine was not comfortable with Peaches. Because Janine just didn't feel comfortable, you know, the out-and-out sexual nature of her work at that time. It wasn't So I sounded like literally I'm not an uncle, but I sounded like somebody's like old uncle who didn't know what the hell was going on. And we played the interview, and it was like an hour long interview, and we played it in chunks. It's commercial radio. And I would follow on the blog. We didn't have IMs at that time. We had a movable type blog that my sister had set up, and I would follow the comments, and people were like, this is the worst interview I've ever heard. I mean, and not just a person said that. At that time, we would get like 50,000 uniques a day on the Majority Report blog. We would get 1,000 comments an hour, 1,000 comments on a blog an hour. And of those, let's say 1,000 comments, I would say like 990 said something to the effect of like, this is the worst interview I've ever heard. So like two or three segments into it, we said we're going to pull the interview. The blog just demanded, and we pulled the interview, and we apologized, and we felt bad, and we just started ending the show with peaches, and that's where that came from.
What does that mean, end it with peaches? Like, you would like put just more like, of that interview on?
We'd just sign off and just say, peaches, as a way of, like, a shout-out to the power of the blog that we had at that time.
Look at what I just IM'd you.
Is that when you stopped reading comments? Is that your...
Oh.
Mid-pitch.
Yeah, no, I've seen that one. That's not as bad as the...
Oh, it's pretty... the facial expression is actually the best part of that one.
All right. Well, so...
Doesn't take a baseball uniform for this...
I understand.
Gross...
Yeah. We don't need to talk about this anymore.
You'll be all high and mighty after you start this.
I'm not being high and mighty about it. I'm getting nauseous. I've been a fan since 2004. I was working to finish my PhD in the fall of that year and spent so much time with Air America. You guys felt like close friends by the time I was done. What a moment. Eric, 22, congratulations on your first 12 years. I first heard you guys on AM 950 on Air America, Minnesota. Yeah, those folks are good folks. They've since sold that station, but... I think it's still a progressive station. Keep up the great work. Next year, the show becomes a teenager and starts experimenting with drugs. Be careful. Dr. Eisman, great hearing from Kathy. Again, would be great to hear a conversation between her and the Deuce. Bertold Mecht. Wait, is Sammy Hagar a reactionary? Damn, I didn't want to take David Lee Roth's side today or any day. Also, is anyone else starting to think the two-party system and a federal government with devolved power to local jurisdictions is maybe a little obsolete? Now, I don't know. I'm just an ill-educated hillbilly, but it seems like every other major Western democracy has a multi-party parliament with a strong central government. I used to fret that there will be a major constitutional crisis in my lifetime, and now I might welcome it. Happy university, y'all. Yeah, you know, I just don't know how we get there, but I would love a crack at the Constitution. Jake the Snake, hey, Sam, I don't know you want to talk about this, but I think we should elect Mussolini to bring about the Great Revolution. We're going to have a truly fantastically beanbag revolution. It's true. Emma, please, could you have a political scientist on to discuss why our electoral rules effectively require us to vote strategically for the lesser of two evils and why a third-party candidate's become spoilers? It's one of the few consensus points in all political science. It's called Deverger's Law. And your folks about, let me just get this. All your discussions about why folks should vote for whichever Democratic Party becomes the nominee would even be stronger with some political science logic and research to back you up. Deverger's Law. All right, I'll look for somebody who's written about that. Chris Lopaco, congratulations on your anniversary, but I think 12 years is probably long enough. Yeah, you may be right. Ilmec, happy 12 years, Majority Report. Thank you. You're the greatest think to come to politics in over a decade, and I get Janine's Catherine Harris, too. Trotsky getting ice-picked, and White Lives Matter. Heaven. Recovering my brat Josh. New Quinnipiac poll has Bernie only 12 points behind in New York. The poll before had him 48 behind. That's true. He's closing in New York. Now, he needs to win more than 51% of the vote in New York. But, I mean, he needs to win by, I think, at least 12 points. But it's trending in the right direction. There's a couple more weeks. We'll see. Salty Peanuts. Has anyone heard from Janine Garofalo lately? Majority Report, Zach. I love Kathy Harris. Glad that horrible lesbian wasn't home today. Doe Link. I turned my Apple class instructor on to Majority Report. By the way, you have hope you have Janine on sometime. Sorry, just not that fond of Kay Harris. Maddow and MSNBC yackers, after candidate interviews last night, said Bernie's response to Trump criminalizing abortion dismissed its importance compared to Hill's. I totally disagree, but felt they kept pushing that interpretation to the detriment of Bernie. I missed that, but happy Cesar Chavez Day. I mean, look, the problem, and this is the reality. The problem is that anti-choicers, basically sovereignty, women's sovereignty, can't address the issue of, if it is murder in their minds, why wouldn't you prosecute the person who either committed the murder by perhaps taking an abortion pill, or has paid for a murderer by hiring the doctor to perform the abortion? And not only have you hired a hitman or woman to perform this murder, you have actually even gone further than that, because you drove the victim to where the murderer was. You, with a forethought, planned the murder. All of this. And they can't respond to it because they really don't know how to deal with this conundrum, because they know that rational people then would begin to realize, like, wow, how can there be a murder without a murderer? And how is it that we don't apply the same standard for murder in this case as other cases? There must be something different. Majority Report Sport. Majority Support. Happy anniversary. How many DVDs are left? 1 million. Epish. Janine and Sam making me feel 22 years old again. Gary Sinise. Oof. Ha. Wilco then and now. Censor Sweep. Wilco with Billy Bragg, actually. I love Janine so much. Were Trump's comments on abortion actually shocking? Aren't women already being punished? Yes, actually, that is the case. There are women who are being arrested in many respects for a mistreatment of their fetus around the country. Didn't moderate Kasich just defund Planned Parenthood? Isn't one of Cruz's advisors pro-abortion provider murder? After the Sanders interview, when Maddow and Chuck Todd and Kornacki were going over the day's mind-numbing coverage, Maddow said that Sanders thinks Trump's position on abortion was not a big deal. It's not a camel toe. It's called a moose knuckle. Paul Carter, best segment ever. Beanbag, love the show. Please don't buy into the Bernie or bust. It's almost as bad as buying into that Bernie bros. The first time I was a bit disappointed with you, Sam, on how you responded to Sarandon. Kyle on Secular Talk did a great job on responding. Should look it up. I mean, look, I'm sorry. The idea that Donald Trump is going to bring about the revolution is just balls to the walls nutso. And I'm willing to debate anybody on that at any time. And that was really the extent of my comments about Sarandon. AJS. Sorry, Cliff and Sam, but it seems a little weird to praise corporations for pressuring Deal to veto the Georgia hate bill. It was public pressure that made it clear to corporations that they can't work in states. Yes, I agree. I agree. You're right. That's a very good point. These corporations are simply responding to public pressure. The NCAA hate bill also prevents local cities from raising their minimum wage, similar to a bill passed in Alabama. Love that conservative local control bromide. Before 08, Republican Party was sclerotic in North Carolina. Once it went for Obama, though, Art Pope flooded the party with cash and Tea Party candidates. They won big in a census year, gerrymandered the state to crap. It'll take a lot to get them out, but maybe the response to this hate bill will help. You guys going to have Thomas Frank on next week. Crazy politics of today are due to Ford pardoning Nixon, I'm convinced. There's no accountability for our elites anymore. From torture to the banks and the war, moral hazard is out the window. I think there's an argument for that. LibCop, Michael, this should be a reminder to quit while you're ahead with the impersonations. No one's going to be remembering Ben Carson, just like Kathleen Harris. MRED, God bless Chris Matthews. It takes a blowhard to interview a blowhard. Joe Bozzi, is this getting through? I got to say, Catherine Harris' bit started off slow, but slowly built up. By the end, I was sure she was Edith from All in the Family. If you believe Hillary is part of the broken system, then why is Bernie or Bust a bad position to have? Because Bernie is also part of a broken system. He's a senator. He's running for president. If he really, I mean, the system is broken, but it can get worse. It's not like this is a plate and it's just simply shattered. No, there's varying degrees of how bad it can be as measured on its impact on people. It makes no sense to say, like, we have a broken system so that the people are not in any way, there is no response from government to the people. And were there a response from the government to the people, we would have things like health care for everybody. We would have more welfare support, just broadly speaking and generally speaking. And then either vote or not lift a finger to stop someone who is going to even strip more of that away. Those two, that does not make sense. I'm sorry, it does not. A square. Happy Feliz Aniversario, Majority Report, from MR with Janine to Cedar on Sundays to Break Room Live. Back to MR with your star producers and amigos who have been a lifeline, Sam. Unbought, unbossed, indeed. Mercy Gracias from A2 and still mooch your hubby O's. Maybe for our 13th anniversary, you can get Dewey to call in. If I could find Dewey, I would. Liberal in Atlanta, have you heard the defense of Trump's punish women? His son now says since abortion isn't illegal, then women won't go to prison for abortion. But if abortion is illegal, then women are breaking law. And we have to. We can't have a president picking and choosing which laws to enforce.
Oh, my God.
Health Paul, I have a request. Can the Majority Report do an episode on the real life of Hillary Clinton? As someone whose first vote took place in 08 for Obama, I didn't fully understand or appreciate the first Clinton presidency. I keep hearing two extreme stories about HRC, one where she's the worst person in history and one where she's the saving grace for feminism. As with most things, I'm sure there's a middle ground, and I, for one, like to hear an unbiased narrative. I mean,
I don't know of,
a writer.
Anybody who doesn't. I feel like, frankly, like the way Sam and I talk about her is like kind of relatively unbiased. I don't, I mean, because they're either like a guy like Joe Connison, who I think is a great reporter, but he's incredibly easy on her, and then someone like Doug Henwood, who really, really, really does not like her.
Wayne Lynch 8. The presidential race in America to us in the UK looks like an effing pantomime. Trump must have underground base where he takes his hair off to stroke it. Hillary lives in Stepford with the other drones, and Bernie's the estranged brother of Dr. Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. And you fuckers run the world?
Yeah. With David Cameron and your various, like, goofy neo-fascist candidates. Like, calm yourself. Go have some bangers and mash.
Emmett
and remember
Brown
your place.
Made a time machine. Excuse me.
Also made a time machine. Yeah, that didn't happen in the
really...
UK, guys.
Ronald
Sorry.
Reagan. Do you guys, did the Republicans learn from all this? I mean, did the autopsy in 2012? No, they're not going to learn anything. There's no they there. The problem is, there's no they there.
How
there's
about
no
we
they.
Don't nominate a race?
Instead of
anymore.
Bernie or bust, people should say Bernie or else I'll run for city council, school board, and Congress, etc. Indeed.
Boom.
Jay Chivone, Sammy Hager, has been fighting against federal control ever since he wrote I Can't Drive 55. Born Blue, happy anniversary. Have you seen the Daily Show segment where Trevor Noah likens the GOP to a rom-com character who doesn't yet recognize Trump is really their dream match? I hope you have many more years of broadcasting. Thank you. American Dream. Yesterday I heard Michael Reagan's impression and thought Michael's Reagan and thought it sounded a lot like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. Some quick research showed his voice is actually based on Reagan's. Who knew? Justin Chair, I don't think Clinton would lose, but has anyone been talking about what happens when a liberal base disheartened by President Clinton failed to turn out in the midterms? Well, I mean, that's dumb, but we've seen that. But, you know, a lot of people argue it's structural. The problem's not Clinton. The problem's the Democratic Party doesn't have an affirmative agenda. I mean, Clinton is I guess, shares that problem would probably be more accurate. Congrats, Sam, for 12 years of creating ripples in the EM spectrum, now being received by citizens on the fifth planet circling the star Tau Ceti, 12 light years from Earth. Oh, okay. Thanks for the call from Katie Harris and Cliff Schechter. I love Sam Cedar. It's called Moose Knuckle. Camel toe is for women. Iron Chink, the moral equivalent of camel toe. Okay, the male. Okay, sorry. DX Fool. Happy anniversary. Love the girl from the Larry Sanders Show. Please note that being transgender is not the same as being gay. There are straight trans people who, like Janet Mock of MSNBC, have a husband. And there are trans lesbians like Dr. Renee Richard. Yes, no, I know that. I'm sorry if it appeared that I didn't know that. Chris Christie has a front ass, as we call it in Montana. Thames Darwin. Idea for a sket. Jeb and W, played by Michael and Sam, fight over Doro's sweat. Sweet attic bedroom after she leaves home to get married. Juliet Bravo, congratulations on your 12th anniversary. Sam, Catherine Harris made me spit take. Seriously, great show. I'm a longtime listener. Happy to support the show as a member and via Just Coffee and other kickbacks. Daria, just like movements are made up of individuals, the progressive media is a collective wherein the responsibility of each member is to encourage individual citizens to learn and actively participate in the political process. It's kind of confused by the Individuals Don't Make a Difference conference yesterday, since I think it's safe to assume that if you say that each individual should volunteer for a candidate they support, you're reaching more than one individual. I'm saying that when you talk about elections this big, I mean, it's not that they don't make a difference. It's that we can't necessarily change where these things are. We can only try. Have you had Martin Nowak from Harvard on to talk about the cycles of cooperation and defection? Not to my knowledge. I will look that up. Left you. No, that call was absolutely priceless. Haven't laughed that hard since the last Judy Gold call. I work for the USPS as a mail character, and y'all make my day from 12 to 2, even so I set alarm so I don't miss it. It's true. Crystal Count. Janine is so quick on her feet and packed with references. Those performances are Emmy-worthy. Dawn, congratulations on the 12 years. I was one of those freaks that used to listen to you guys on the internet before Atlanta. I got an affiliate, so keep the good job up. Thanks, Dawn. Bandwagon, congratulations on 12 years. I've missed only two shows since you started MR in Air America in 04. Years great now, if not better than ever. Still the best radio show I know of going. I'm glad and grateful you're still doing it. Thank you, Bandwagon. Beach Break. I took Isabel's recommendation and watching Freaking Geeks. Too bad Janine wasn't in it. She would have been great. Jeremo, 10 years and you're still the most insightful, fair political podcast in the market. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Jeremo. Godwin, I don't want to be inflammatory, but Hillary Clinton said in a recent town hall that she's against late-term abortions. How do laws against late-term abortions not punish women? Seriously. Spencer, regarding Duviger's hypothesis, it's not a law. The theory does not justify voting for the lesser two evils, but rather how two parties' polarities push out multipartism. Tic-tac. Because of the way third party splits on the electorate on the side of political spectrum, the only chance for success is if a fourth party on the other side of the political spectrum. It's not been plausible before 2016, but it has potential. Not to confuse, Chris Christie has two front asses. Suicidal burrito. Recently, a study came out about 15 times U.S. raised the minimum wage and found that it had no link to either job loss or job creation. I was wondering if you knew the study I'm talking about. Can't find it. I have not heard that one. Stoon, happy Tesla Model 3 reveal day. Joshua, after finding your show, I progressed to watching other connected outlets like Ring of Fire. Thank you guys for fighting the battle. Just want to ask people that claim to be supporters of Bernie to ask themselves if they're acting and speaking to people in the way Bernie is. His message about changing the political economic power structure, period. It's about building bridges between everyone that has suffered under those systems. If you're trying to out insult and attacking people personally, you're hurting the movement, not helping. The current system is hoping that we fight each other. They don't want us to ever sideline social issues. the social issues fight is a distraction they've always used to benefit their pockets and their political ambition. Two more. Snicker, congrats on 12 years. What are the plans for the next 12? Oh, boy, I don't know. Ice cream socialists, will anybody on to discuss the teacher strike in Chicago? We're going to look into it. We have some guys. Maybe Mika. Yep. All right, folks. That's the show for today. We'll be back tomorrow, hopefully, unless something gets screwed up with our new tech. We bought a switcher, the X215000 from B&H, and nobody knows how to work it, and it's causing all sorts of headaches for us.
And I installed it, so.
But I do want to thank all of you. Obviously, there's no way I could have done this show without the support of people who listen to the original Majority Report. That's just, that's not gratuitous. That is, it's heartfelt, but it's not a platitude. I mean, I want you to know, not just that I know, but that you should know that there is no way, no way I could have done this, but for the fans that we had at Air America, both Janine and I at that time, and then through the years there, many of you had sent us an email at one time or another, and signed up our email list, and you guys became the foundation of this program, which has continued to grow. So I want to thank all of you. I want to thank all of you who have just obviously just joined us recently, but I really appreciate it. This has been a second career for me that I have, I'm enjoying and hope to continue for, I guess, gosh, another 12 years. Maybe a little bit more. Maybe not too much more than 12 more years, but 12 years. I mean, 25 years would be a good run, maybe, or 30. I don't know. Maybe I'll be doing this for 40 years. I mean, it would be hard to imagine I could shut up at any given point, but
might as well get compensated for what you'll be inevitably doing anyway.
Right. Instead of just annoying people with it, like at a cafe, just barking into my coffee.
I have a feeling that you will be doing that.
That's probably true. All right, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in.